Hello and welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. My name is Jack Summerhurst. A bit of an odd edition of the pod this week. We're going to look at the Leighton Orient game and, of course, the appointment of Mark Bonner. We're also going to take your questions as well as talking about the impending doom of coronavirus. So I welcome Julian Roberts.
Lovely to be here from the lockdown.
Jordan Moreland.
Yeah, you're all locked down in my house.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're all clean. And
I've been coughing on the door.
Looking at you, Jack, I'm worried. But
I've been drinking hand sanitizer for weeks now.
Yeah, I'm fine. No Tom Walker this week. We'll give you updates as and when we get them. But
we tried to get him live from his quarantine, but he's too far gone.
No signal in the bubble. But anyway, cracking on and moving on. There's been some quite significant news other than all of football being called off, hasn't there, regarding Cambridge United? So,
oh, we've got a new manager.
We went for the cheap option, didn't we? Come on, let's address it. Let's address it head on.
It was a very Cambridge United appointment, wasn't it?
I think it was one of those predictable things. I think when probably about an hour after the Colchester game, I was like, we're going to hire Mark Bonner.
I feel like we've been grooming Mark Bonner to give him this job for quite some time, though. Like, he got put into the first team picture under Joe Dunn, I think. Joe Dunn didn't get to bring his own assistant in. It seemed that however long ago that was, 2 years, 3 years ago, he's been earmarked by the club to eventually take this top job.
So I've been trying to think of positives, and his longevity at the club could well be a big positive. As in, he knows this squad inside out, right? He's been here, apart from Harrison Dunk or Greg, as long as anyone. He knows them all. He's seen them all arrive. He's seen a lot of bad players go. You'd maybe, as a positive, it's like, well, they know each other. They want to play for him a lot more than it would be if it was someone else coming in. I am just trying to think of positives here.
Well, I too have had my Julian Roberts happy clapper hat on, trying to think of some positives, and I had some similar ones. I think the fact that, yeah, like you say, he's been here for a long time means that there's an association to the club. He is a Cambridge United man through and through, as it were. You know, he knows, obviously, the youngsters, those in and around the first team at the moment, and those who may be a step or two behind in their sort of progress in their age range, but who might be coming up to the first team at some point in the next, you know, however many months to years. So there are positives there. And that's when I sort of start struggling for positives. I think another one might be that he is like a big achiever so far. You know, he wasn't a professional footballer. He was in and around a team in Comberton, I think. My Mark Bonner autobiography hasn't arrived yet, so I don't fully know the history, but I think he was involved with Comberton Angels, which is not even a semi-pro team, I don't think. So he's somehow risen from, yeah, sort of local leagues into sort of top job at Cambridge United. So there must be a reason that he's risen that far. He must be good at you know, tactics or motivation or just football knowledge. There must be something there that's seen him sort of promoted. So maybe that is a positive for us to take. I think the fact that he's more of a coach than a manager might also be a positive.
Especially going into this exact role as a head coach, right? Which, yeah, I know, I appreciate it's still quite ambiguous about powers and selection and transfers, but you'd think that I agree, that could be twisted as a positive.
And I think if anyone's going to work hard for this opportunity and for the club, it'll be Mark Bonner, who's come from nowhere to get the top job. So maybe that might turn into some unexpected results and performances. But I think the other thing going for Mark Bonner is the bar's pretty low. I think expectations amongst fans is pretty low.
I would say amongst fans, especially people that I've spoken to or things that I've seen on the message board, is people want him to do well. There is just absolutely no expectation that he will. There's like this sort of, everyone seems to sort of appreciate this is a huge, huge risk. And like, obviously, everyone obviously wants him to do well. I don't think anyone sat here going, I hope he fails. But I don't think there's any faith.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because, yeah, I think the majority of the fan base will think, I'm underwhelmed, but not surprised. I hope I'm wrong and I wish him the best. And those are all quite sort of good sentiment going towards him. But I think at the same time, he's not going to get an easy ride from the fans. I think from day one, people in the fan base are going to have this mentality of a I told you so. They're going to be ready to sort of push that button and say, oh, it's not worked out. Told you so. Told you that's going to happen. Told you it'd be the same as Joe Dunn. I guess
the real hope is that they haven't just hired him just off the back of that, the first five games. If then I'm really hoping that obviously we don't sit behind the scenes. We don't know what he's like in the training ground. We don't know what his development's been like as a coach. The real hope is that they really do see potential in him. And it wasn't just, oh, look, you know, we picked up some decent results.
Do you think that we kind of touched on it last pod? Do you think this is a last chance saloon for him at Cambridge United? If this goes wrong for Mark Bonner, do you think this is the end of his chapter at Cambridge United?
Probably, because it's a contract until the end of next season. If it was a end of this season and it didn't work, I think he could still have a future as a, depending on who were to come in. But I think given the way this contract works, I don't know if you disagree, George, but given the way this contract's worked out as a permanent contract till the end of next season, this is a, you know, you have to succeed if you want to stay.
I kind of agree. I wonder if his background means that if it doesn't work out for him as head coach, that's the end of him as a head coach ever. That might be the case. Could he get a job elsewhere? But if he doesn't work out as a head coach, I have a feeling that he might still sort of end up just being pushed into another role within the club.
Maybe in like a development role sort of thing. Yeah.
I mean, he had great success with like the youth team, so we shouldn't forget that. And I don't know. It is hard to see what future he could have if this doesn't work out. But more so Mark Bonner, I think, if things aren't going to work out, is it going to be him that it's last chance for, or is it Ben Strang, or is it the structure of the club as a whole? I think this is probably last chance saloon for quite a few of those things. And
I think people were hoping that Calderwood would have been that, if you see what I mean. I have no faith that will change. I think the structure of the club is almost like, there's this huge hope that that's the thing that will change. There'll be this huge clear out, we'll start from scratch. But I'm really sceptical that will happen. I don't know. This is all thinking a lot into the future. I think we could, I mean, very simple question. Do we expect Mark Bonner to be fighting for the playoffs next year?
It's hard to see based on the last couple of games. Seeing us, fighting for the playoffs, it's seen sort of the reaction of the players kind of reverting back to type and, you know, similar problems that had gone on earlier in the season were creeping back into people's games. So it seems that the first five or six results, as great as they were, did feel a little bit like a new manager bounce. And now all of a sudden we're in a predicament where actually people are reverting to type and not going to be capable of getting us there. Of course, the big thing to fully answer that question about, you know, can he turn us into playoff contenders next season all depends on what happens once players are out of their contracts. I wanted to say this summer, but we don't really know what this summer is going to entail just yet with everything going on with postponements and stuff like that. But I think the big one is going into the summer, and is he going to be able to make those real ruthless decisions, get rid of players who should be getting rid of, demoting players back down to backup rather than sort of first team starters. And I think one of my big sort of doubts about the Bonner appointment is the issue kind of surrounding the sort of the emphasis on the Bonner-Strang relationship, and more so on Ben Strang and his responsibilities that he's going to have to pick up with Mark Bonner's appointment. Primarily, Mark Bonner's not going to have those connections that previous managers have had, so he's not going to be able to call up buddies and get advice or get tips on players. Finding those new players is going to have to come from elsewhere in the club, and you'd look at Ben Strang as probably the first option for that.
It's going to be such a steep learning curve for Mark Bonner.
I mean, it must be the worst time though for a football, you know, coach trying to find his feet, getting this big break at somewhere like Cambridge, and now all momentum is killed. We're going to come on to it more later, but this season has been, you know, abruptly stopped to something that no one could have allowed for. And now he's got to prove himself off the back of this.
Or does it give him a month to suss out what his plans are? Does it give him a month to figure out, you know, pick out some targets, look back at a lot of video footage, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's he'll have a lot of time on his hands, as we all do, to assess what he wants to do with the squad. Obviously, the future's so uncertain, and we're going to come onto this because of the crazy situation that we're all living through. But one thing I did want to ask is, in the statement, Paul Barry said, this is a quote, "I made it clear to Mark that I'll be making available a larger playing budget to help us do this," referring to competing at the top end of the table. Does that, to you, imply that he's going to have control over the signings? Or is that just a phrase? Is it just phrasing it as like the transfer department?
I think it will be the system will have, you know, a greater budget to sort of invest in players. Of course, that statement was made before everything that's gone on this week. I think the big question is, you know, one, what does that larger investment mean? But the bigger question is, has the club learned from the last time we were in this position? The last time we had a new manager who got a bit of a reaction from players after they weren't performing particularly well under the previous boss, who then got sort of contract renewals in the summer and ended up staying. And then the start of the next season was, it was terrible. So has the club learnt from that? That's the real question. Or are we going to be in a position, you know, come July 1st, where some names are going to be signing sort of new contracts with us when really they should be shown the door?
I think that's such a big question, isn't it? Especially like this positive that I started with. You either look at it as a positive that he knows the squad really well, but do we want him to know this squad really well? As in, do we not want, as you exactly like you say, does he have the ruthlessness in him to be like, Liam O'Neill, no.
Yeah.
That's enough. Or is there too much of a friendly... This is obviously just complete... It's complete,
hypothetical thinking, isn't it? Yeah.
That's the word.
Yeah.
I think what we really need to know is, can he build a solid defence from finding his own players and starting from scratch? Can he make calls over players? Can he find their best positions? You know, can he spot new players and then coach them so that they flourish? Those are all the questions that we need answering. And I don't think we'll see that whilst we're stuck with a certain number of people that are in the playing squad at the moment, because we'll come on to Orient and Carlisle later. But we saw in both those games that, you know, just reverting back to how they've been, you know, for the last 1, 2, 3 seasons.
I mean, Orient especially, maybe this is now a chance to have a bit of a chat about what happened at Orient, which is, I think, for everyone that was there, the biggest game of the season. We've got nothing to fight for this year. It's a great day out. There's a derby involved, but there's no hatred involved. It's just a great day. And we really rolled over. We didn't deserve a single point from that game. We didn't deserve... I don't even think we deserved a score, really. I don't think we offered anything. Victor Adebayejo, as bad a performance as I've seen in a long, 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 long time. Callum Burton, got to say, George, I'm sorry. You were absolutely right.
I take no victory in being right in that instance. It was poor, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a great day out that was nearly ruined by 90 minutes of terrible football. And it's an odd one, isn't it? Because we've been pretty bad this season, but every time we've played Orient, we've been like next level bad.
Yeah, they really managed to bring out the worst.
Yeah, and there's some lad I work with who's an Orient fan, and both times I've just had to sort of say to him, I don't know what happened there. We were extra bad when we played against you. But I think ultimately what went wrong on the day, keep saying players reverting to type, but I think it was that, you know, there was a real lack of energy in the squad. We weren't closing people down. We were nowhere near second balls.
The midfielder decided to self-isolate a month a month beforehand.
And that's the worry, isn't it? Because it did look like people weren't busting a gut, you know, and you just think, well, hang on, so you're not playing for Mark Bonner like we thought you were a couple of weeks ago. And that's the real concern. And also another real concern was that Bonner's allowed them to start playing long ball again. It was really, really horrid to watch at points, because we're pumping the ball up to Big Vic, who, as Julian quite rightly points out, had possibly one of the worst performances in a Cambridge United shirt for a long time, who just wasn't able to hold it up. And yet we just kept seeing it time and time and time again. And there was just nothing, no positives really to take from that.
Do you think that there was anything positive to take from the game at all? I mean, sadly for myself, I wasn't there, but it did sound like an absolute, atrocious game of football. As you said, you had a good day out, but is there any positives that can be taken? I mean, that's such a sad game to have as the last game before, you know, an indefinite break.
Yeah, I thought Paul Mullin had a decent game.
I was going to say Mullin's probably the only positive.
Maris and Noyle didn't disgrace themselves at all. They ran around a bit. But I think that's it, really. There was an interesting discussion afterwards about our strikers. We have a lot of low knees who play up top, don't we?
Yeah, we were too slow to move on the day. We were too slow moving the ball forward, which has been such a pattern for such a long time. There was no real purpose. We weren't sort of creating spaces and chances. So it's hard to think of any positives. I'll give it a go. Paul Mullin, I thought, was brilliant. I think his levels of commitment were outstanding, especially considering that he's a lone player. Made himself a real pest.
It's a good goal as well. He took it quite well.
Yep, and nearly scored with a header in the first half as well. I thought Jack Rowles looked good when he came back on second half. Yeah,
I don't think he quite offered enough for someone chasing the game 2-1 down. I thought he could have offered a little bit more.
Yeah, but I wonder if that was the shape and the positioning that him and Sam Smith were in. So
that's a really good point, because Sam Smith coming on, great to see him back playing out wide in some 4-3-3. Adebayo just some acid on the pitch. That was really bizarre. We looked even worse when we changed to that formation in the last 5 minutes.
And that's a worry, isn't it? Because in the first sort of 4 or 5 games under Bonner, we were sat here going, oh, he's getting his substitutions right. He's obviously reading the game well. He's got his tactics right. And, you know, maybe there were things that we don't know on Saturday that impacted what changes he's made. But I don't think you can argue any of them were right. He probably should have made a change at halftime. Karabazin picks up an injury, so fair enough that changes maybe your thinking of what you can do. But yeah, keeping Big Vic on was questionable. Keeping Dunk at left back and not pushing him further forward was questionable.
I was going to say, Dunk was very exposed, wasn't he? Like, I know there's a few games where you really see that he isn't actually a left back, that he obviously does a job and he feels like he sometimes really, really well and his attacking traits are brilliant, but he did seem quite exposed to me.
I think he struggled with a very bobbly, unforgiving pitch as well, wasn't it? There was no real sort of bounce or give in it. Just on Dunk, you're absolutely right. He, at times, does look like a left-sided midfielder playing left back and it seems to be caught out of position. And I think part of that is because, although he's playing left back, he is still being asked to push on and be available to sort of that narrow kind of four in midfield to sort of get a bit of width early. Yeah, but I think once Ben Coker's fit, if he gets fit, I think we'll see him slot into left back, and that'll be interesting to see.
He might never play for Cambridge United.
He might never this season.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's a testament for Dunk, though, isn't it, that he has sort of adapted to a point there. He has done a reasonable job at left back, even though
absolutely
he's not a left back. But
yeah, I almost don't mean it as a criticism. I almost mean it as like a, you know, fair enough. It's just you know, that's what's going to happen if we play a left wing or left back for so long.
If we're looking for positives from the Orient game, I think another one would be we're finding out a bit more about how to play with Carruthers. A lot of people weren't particularly impressed with Carruthers' performance, and I can understand why. But what I think we sort of learn is he needs a Liam O'Neill type player next to him. So we experimented against Orient by having Paul Lewis next to him. The game before that, it was George Maris next to him. Neither of those sort of pairings seemed to work. So yeah, I think if we're clutching at straws trying to find any positives, other than the fact it didn't rain, is that we found out a little bit more about Carruthers in that sort of central midfield role.
I'm going to use the word Tom Champion here. And it's because I will get him into as many pods as physically possible. But what he did so well in that promotion winning team, and it's what a lot of successful teams have, is an anchor in midfield whose job it is to screen the back four. Mm. And it allows your other player in the promotion season, Luke Berry, to be a lot more creative and have less shackles on him. Whereas when you give Carruthers those defensive responsibilities, he's half the player.
It's an odd one, isn't it? Because he is that deep lying kind of creative player like we were talking about previously. He does like to be in that sort of that deep role, but he's not a defensive player.
No, and that bit, like you say, that's something that we've probably learnt now, is that isn't going to work as a midfield pairing. Mm-mm. And you have to have a defensive minded centre midfielder alongside him.
I mean, both of Orient's goals came just steamrolling straight through our midfield.
Like, the second one, no one closed him down for about a year.
And that was Paul Lewis. I think Carruthers went down in the build-up. I genuinely thought it was a foul at the time. I've not watched it back. It's too painful. But he went down in the build-up. But it was Lewis that was tracking back after Carruthers was beaten, who just allowed a guy to run and run and run, get a shot away.
I think this is...
We're going to get on to Burton, obviously. But before we lay into Burton, Greg Taylor could have done better.
Yeah.
There could have been a challenge earlier. Could have cleared the ball.
Could have been closed down earlier. Could have been blah, 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 blah. It wasn't like it flew into the top bins.
Yeah.
It was a really tame effort. Pretty much, I mean, just to the keeper's right.
Yep.
It looked so comfortable. Or like, at least you have to parry that somewhere safely.
Well, don't parry it.
Just catch it.
Just hold on to it.
Yeah.
All right, so if we ever see another Cambridge game this season, who's in between the sticks for you?
Oh, it's Mitov for me. After that, yeah. It's definitely Mitov, yeah.
Well, you see, like, I think we could have this conversation week in, week out on the pod, because Mitov has had let some absolute clangers go. We shouldn't forget that in recent history. And he doesn't dictate his area like
yeah,
really
he loves sticking on the line.
He stays
he?
Back. His distribution is erratic at best.
Well, Burton's at Orient was just horrendous. Like, yeah, he couldn't get the ball beyond the halfway line.
It sounds like we haven't got quite a good enough keeper then, you know, on the face of it.
Yeah, or it's eggs in one basket and just like...
Go for one,
not the other. I don't quite know if this chopping and changing will work, especially like confidence-wise. I don't know if you're... Obviously, you've always got someone over your shoulder. Maybe competition's good, though. I don't know.
I think a bit of consistency and a bit of time in a team, though, has proved... You know, if you look at Will Norris, when he had all of that time out on loan in a team, came in and made, you know, the role his own, and then quickly was playing in a... Well, trying to play in a higher league and in a higher team. So I think, consistency for a young player, youngish goalkeeper, gives them the time. Doesn't it?
So what do you do in the summer? Do you find a new one, do you reckon?
I'll be sheltering, mate. I'll be in lockdown. So, I think it would be no bad thing. I think we've got some other priorities, probably.
Yeah.
I would almost try and find a player for every position, to be honest. So that question doesn't...
Well, it's funny you say that. It does...
Brilliant. Jack just sneezing on the pod there. Yeah. By the way.
It does reek of a team that desperately needs a new spine.
Yeah.
New defensive central mid, new goalkeeper, new striker, and dare I say, some new centre-backs.
Yeah, a couple of strikers as well.
I think Harry Darling's got a future at the club, but should we talk about Greg Taylor and George Taffer a bit?
Well, I mean, yeah, we had a question in, come in from Jay, purely asking why is George Taff not playing? And it's a great question and might open up a kettle of fish about players who might need to go and others who don't.
Well, George Taff, depending on how the season plays out and when games happen, but by the looks of it in the week on social media, looks like he's done his ankle in the reserve game, so probably won't play.
Right.
Probably won't play for us again. Before that happened, you know, going to the Orient game and Carlisle and so on and so forth, I'm not really sure why he wasn't in and around the starting lineup. I don't know. I hadn't seen enough in Greg Taylor's performances over the last few weeks to justify him being that starter.
I think you could extend that to a bit longer than that. Mm. I don't know if he's like really cut himself. He's a decent enough squad player. He's obviously got a good commitment to Cambridge United, which you always like to see. But are we really? I can't see him being a world beater at this level, anyone who really forms the spine of a promotion-winning team in League Two.
Bonner got the job on an interim basis. He cut his hair. He started playing well. And then I think he just falls perfectly into that category of players reverting back to type after that sort of initial bounce.
Do you think he's almost just too comfortable? He's been here for so long. He just knows that that position's going to be his. This, I guess, goes back to Bonner, right? It's like, does he have the bottle to be like, Greg, sorry, mate?
Yeah, I don't think it's a mentality thing for Taylor. I think it's probably a limitation to quality.
Ability, probably.
Yeah.
Without being too harsh.
But yeah, it absolutely comes back to the Bonner kind of situation. Like, is he gonna have the guts to let players like that go or demote them to sort of squad players and you know, replace them with better? Really, really hope so, because
that's what he's going to get judged on a lot as well, right? That's going to become very clear this summer or this winter when the transfer window probably ends up being.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that it's an open-ended question and we kind of have a limited ability to answer it. Because we don't quite know.
I would say, I mean, if he's injured, obviously, there's your answer. Yeah. But I agree with the question in that, why not? Clearly, Greg Taylor's, over the past couple of games, not been at the level that we should be expecting.
Taft out of contract in the summer, do we know?
Right. No idea.
I think
we should be knowing that.
No,
yeah.
I think this is his second year. I think he's out of contract. I wonder if he's not playing. Look up Jabo Abire. I wonder if he's not playing because he's close to triggering an extension, and maybe they don't want him.
Maybe they don't want him. Yeah.
Conspiracy theory going on the pod.
Although, but then he's been on the bench, so maybe not.
We'll see. I think we'll end that part there, and we'll come back in the second half with a look at how coronavirus will affect Cambridge and the wider football world. Welcome back to Under the Abbey Stand. Into this part then, we're going to be exploring a new topic for all of us, obviously. The view from Bradwell Common is someone who's tweeted us recently, quite a nice Twitter handle. How long can the season be suspended for before we go bust?
This is obviously, I don't know if I know. First of all, we're living in absolutely mental times. This is completely unprecedented, right?
Yeah.
I thought the most annoying thing in life was having to listen to people call Mark Bonner Bonds. And now this has taken over from that, and it's pretty worrying, man.
I mean, so as it stands, as we're recording, all football in this country is suspended until the 4th of April.
Mm-hmm. But mate, it's not going to be a 4th of
April. It's not going to be a 4th of
Absolutely
April.
Absolutely no chance we're going to be back in grounds before then.
And
at that point, it'll be later than that, won't
it? So we're expecting to probably be back, what, like mid-May? Something like that? No one knows.
I don't even know how to call it, because I was reading an article reckoning that actually June is going to be probably where the biggest spikes happen.
Yeah. So that means we're looking at 2.5 months without any income, any match day income, which clubs, and not just us, rely on. We're actually probably in an incredible position compared to, like, I'm thinking about Macclesfield and Oldham and these sorts of clubs.
Bolton.
Yeah, I don't think these clubs have got long. And
even Southend.
Yeah. These clubs don't have long, and they must be really worried.
To put it into context, the chief executive at Shrewsbury Town reckons they're going to lose between 200 and 250K if they don't play those 5 home games.
And that's, if they don't play them at all, if they cancel the season, don't play them.
It says not playing those 5 home games will cost them in that sort of region. Yeah. So
that's a big money to make up at this sort of level. So I can't, the question, going back to the question, it's like, I wish I could say how long, 2 months and then we're fucked.
Yeah.
But I guess what we can say is, like, it's a really worrying amount of time to not have match day income for.
And what you've got to remember is, once they start saying, yeah, you can play games again, are people going to rush back to go and watch games? Are people going to be scared of or worried about going to sort of large gatherings and sporting events? Will they, will they stay away? Will the games be happening in July and August and people are like, well, I can't get to that. I've got childcare or I've got holidays or whatever. There's no, all scenarios here that are all sort of worrying sort of outcomes. And the big one as well is, we've not mentioned him yet, but Paul Barry's industry is the travel industry. Where we're going to be looking for support and money is from our sugar daddy. But if his natural sort of income streams are going to be massively hit by this, that's going to shaft us, not only making up this sort of this shortfall in money, but that lovely quote from the first part of this pod about having an extra investment in the playing budget, that's probably going to go down a shitter.
It's like, is he really going to give £1 million to sign a new left back? Obviously not, £1 million to sign a group of players. It'd be great if it was just £1 million for a left back. That's the sort of standards I'm looking at. Yeah. But like, Danny Rose.
Of all the left backs you could have done.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Well, it's only a mil.
But as in, is he going to invest his money, which is, what he's obviously intending, when he can't keep his own business afloat? In that time.
Do you know the worst thing is? This might keep Stevenage in the Football League.
I know.
That's mental. Imagine surviving a season because other clubs have gone bust.
I mean, if you're like at the top end of the table, Imagine if this was the 2013-14 season and we were fighting for promotion and we were this close.
Mm. We were, yeah, you'd be heartbroken.
You'd be heartbroken,
you?
Like, yeah.
Where do you stop it? Do
imagine
you...
being a Barrow fan now. That might be...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Jack and I were talking about this off air. If we look at it sort of wider football, I think the only decision you could probably get away with making is giving Liverpool the Prem title. Because they're so far clear and because there's no sort of significant repercussions in terms of that, i.e. promotion or you know, things like that. That's the only kind of position you can actually sort of make a call on. Everything else, whether it be the top or the bottom of the leagues, from the bottom of the Prem, top of the Championship, right down to League Two and the Conference, you can't get it right. If you null and void the season, it's going to impact other people. If you say the season stops now and we just go with whatever positions people are in, it's going to impact people.
Also, what happens with League One's 24th spot, which is currently unoccupied? If it's like, right, nothing happens, no one moves, we start again, this season null and void, expunged, then do they just play with 23 again?
Well, but they're also talking next season about the Premier League being 22 teams.
To make up...
So if the season was to be stopped, 22 teams competing in next year's Premier League, and then that would mess it up again. And I don't know, I think the two teams, as it stands, will be West Brom and Leeds.
Right.
But that then opens up a whole other can of worms. And also, something we've not even touched on, which is massive, you know, talking about playing games in June and July, that is, you know, considering that the Euros gets... you know, pushed back. And obviously, I don't think there's many people.
Yeah, less of a problem for Cambridge United. Yeah.
But there'd be no one going to the games and it'd be... You know,
well, that will have a huge impact for the economies of host cities,
yeah.
Of which there are loads because of the mental idea of sharing the tournament.
Of all the years as well. to have it everywhere.
I think non-league... football that isn't based in a league, it's not non-league football, should take a step back. I think the priority has to be... finishing the leagues. So if it means sacking off the Champions League, the FA Cup.
I think
you're going to have to do it. Maybe you're going to have to make spaces to get these games done.
I heard maybe next season, yeah, you sack off all domestic cup competitions. So there's no FA Cup, there's no League Cup, there's no bloody, whatever it's called now, the Checker Trade.
The Checker Trade will fucking survive, won't it?
Yeah, I bet it will. One tournament.
A bit like a cockroach after like a nuclear explosion. It survives. Because one person reckons that it's good to let the kids have a game with the adults.
So what happens if they extend the season? They say, right, the season's going to end in, I don't know, August, and then they push the next one, blah, 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 whatever. They do something like that. And what happens to our players who are out of contract at the end of this season?
Great, isn't it? Yeah, just as you think you're going to get rid of Liam O'Neill, something he's managed
about
to survive it again. Yeah. My assumption would be that they would make some sort of allowance for... you know, non-contract terms or shorter contracts to cover, say...
So they get paid for another...
Yeah. Oh, well, you can't not pay them for the games and the weeks and the months that we're not playing games, because that's mental. You can't do that. And yeah, if you're going to extend the season into June, where contracts normally finish at the start, or into July, where contracts maybe finish at the end of June, you're just going to have to pay them for it. It's going to have to be some sort of rolling kind of... agreement, because you can't, yeah, you know, there's probably a whole load of clubs that are in the same position as us that have a lot of people out of contract who, yeah, you can't just get rid of, say, 10 players and then find sort of replacements straight away to finish the season. Although that would be crazy, like having this really sort of sporadic end of season transfer window where actually for the last 5 games, you could get a whole load of quality players in from somewhere else because they've been
released. Like a draft pick.
Yeah.
God, yeah.
But it is all a bit kind of fluid, and we're so early on in this process, you know, we're within a week of it all being...
But we're assuming that it will be finished over the summer. There's talk that it might actually go into the autumn, you know, you might get until, say, September, you know, November sort of time to finish sort of club competitions. Do the Euros at the same time as the African Cup of Nations, and then you're setting yourself up to be on this kind of tilt, ready for the Winter World Cup.
Oh God, wow. It's just, honestly, this whole thing, it's just the fact that this conversation is actually like really happening It's just insane, isn't it?
Yeah, I never thought we'd talk anything outside football, you know, outside of Cambridge United on the pod, and somehow we found ourselves...
Hey, start talking about the Premier League, you've got loads to say.
I just think they should, bin it off.
So what happens to Mooseneet?
Oh, I've been so bad this year. I'm so glad if they just scratch that off or stay in Division 5.
We've also got a charity game happening at the end of April.
Well, no, that's gone. That's been
brilliant.
Postponed.
Didn't see that.
That's
great. Really have done my research, haven't I?
But no, postponed but to think, be played again.
Do you think the club could be doing more to...
On my coronavirus?
Well, yeah, you know.
Mark Connor should be finding a cure. Yeah. What's he doing? It's important.
Yeah. But do you think the club could be doing more to figure out how to sort of cover those costs for this sort of period of time? So I'll give you some for examples.
Soccer school.
I'll give you an example. I was with my girlfriend's family yesterday, and they're all Brentford fans, and they can buy their season tickets already for next year. We can't do that for Cambridge United. Put tickets on sale so season ticket holders can buy their new tickets. That plugs a small pocket of or small window of sort of cash sort of injection.
And if there was an honesty about that money being really needed, I think people would dig a little bit just to.
I think people.
To cover this gap.
I think people who already have tickets, who already have season tickets, might even be tempted to pay for, you know, a 5-game saver ticket for the rest of the season if that was available, because I think those that really love the club enough to put their hand into their pocket. I know people who have making the most of the club shop sale, which is currently on, by sort of buying a whole load of, you know, tat like fridge magnets and training kit that they don't need just to help the club out.
So I think going that there's a real risk that we could be in some serious financial trouble. But I also, I think there's just so many other clubs that are going to be a lot worse off than us, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, but it means nothing if our club goes bust.
Like, no, but I'm saying that, like...
Oh, yeah, it's a bigger picture.
It's a huge picture. Yeah. And if there's, like, you know, 10 clubs going bust, is there a bailout from someone? I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
do you think
actually,
the Football League, you know, could get him
the FA?
In at some point, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, if you've got 10 clubs going bust, that's just completely unprecedented. Surely that can't happen.
I think, as we say, we're kind of surmising and, hypothetically talking at the moment, but there is a very real possibility that some clubs will not be able to come back from this and, we don't know what's going to happen in the leagues. With Cambridge, looking forward, if we do get to finish this season and the out-of-contract players get a little extension or whatever, those players are out of contract. Who gets fresh terms? And do you put anyone who is contracted on the transfer list? Let's just wheel ourselves back to Cambridge a little bit on these questions. That's from Will, by the way.
So, who do we give fresh terms to?
Yeah.
Paul Mullen.
I mean, yeah, I'd do a lot to try sign him. Do you know what? I think it's a pretty short list. Who's out of contract this summer?
Liam O'Neill,
yeah. So, I think the big thing... It's coming back to sort of Mark Bonner is not expecting him to be the perfect coach, but it's whether he can be capable of improving us to a point that we can, you know, make like a good sort of go at it next year. And I think a big part of that is around this question about who he keeps and who he brings in. Obviously, bringing people in is going to be limited because of his connections, and a lot, like we were saying before, is about Strang. But who does he keep? I think there's some really big questions there, because there are some 1 in 4 players who are going to be quite difficult calls. So Paul Lewis is a prime example. His contract will be up in the summer. He's been here nearly 3 years now. We paid a fee for him. And he is the epitome of like a 1 in 4 kind of player. Like, you know, he makes chances and he gets goals every now and then, but he's not sustained it long enough. So I think there's going to be some really fascinating calls.
And he's definitely been given a lot of time in this squad to show his worth, right? And
yeah,
there's probably an argument that if we're going to have a big clear out, he clearly hasn't done enough to like impress everyone. So maybe it's like, well, okay, then he's not good enough. Yeah. But then this goes back to the financial question that we had a minute ago. That's like, well, are we going to have to start taking some cheaper options here? And I think Paul Lewis is definitely not a bad player at this level. If you ask me, I think I'm quite kind to him.
I think
he's a decent enough player.
Yeah, he's frustrating.
Yeah, the fact that he is like a 1 in 4.
Yeah.
Player is exactly what most League Two players are, right? Especially in that sort of mid-table kind of bracket. So he is at the level that the club are at, and it's whether the club want to step it up a level and then and that will ultimately impact whether he stays or not. I think he'll be a really difficult decision to make. I think there'll be some easier ones. I think, you know, Liam O'Neill will be an easy one. I think he'll be gone. I think, who else have we got? I think Taff will be an easy one. I think he might be
gone. I think, yeah.
And to be honest, if there is anyone else, it looks like this whole situation might have given some players on the cusp or on the fringe a bit of an extra chance, if I'm honest. Like, if you look at this after whatever happens when it's all blown over, like, I think they'll be looking to keep a squad together and, you know, give people a chance and not spend too much more money. So it might end up that some of the players that would have normally gone in the summer might end up staying and getting another year at Cambridge.
God, not Reggie Lammer, though.
Oh, God, yeah. That's one I'd definitely get rid of.
I mean, this just comes back to the great unknown that is Bono. You know, will he be brilliant? But, like, is the unknown the fact that we've sat on this gem? Is his first job going to be a bit like John Beck, where he just becomes a massive, massive success? Or is he going to go the other way and, you know, this will be his first and only head coach job? I think, and, you know, one of the fascinating questions is he going to be able to find enough players or be able to mould a squad that has contingency in it, so not just have players that fit his 4-4-2 formation that he seems to fancy, but will he be able to have options off the bench to mix things up if things aren't going our way in games? You know, that second half of Leyton Orient suggests that he's maybe not primed to be doing that, but...
It's really hard, isn't it? Because this kind of goes back to everything we were talking about in the first half. Like, the results, the Carlisle and Orient results halted our momentum. Mm. And now the momentum has been halted to another level. So it's such a tough point to be, like, talking about him and talking about players, because you never know how players play under new managers and if he finds a different system. So, like, I completely agree that Lamb would be one that I would personally get rid of. But then, Jack, you mentioned last week that's like, well, have we maybe never played him in the right position, just sitting off the striker? Maybe there is a player in there. I've got to say, I don't agree with that point of view. But as in, it's hard to say, right? Like, if Bonner could end up finding a formation that these players fit into a bit better, and that's the job of a football coach, right? Yeah. To make the players that he's got available.
I tell you who won't see next season, Dan Jones.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, I'm about to make a point. I just remember earlier this season, Slate and Reggie Lamb and other people round the table saying that he was worth keeping and having in the squad.
Do you know what? Earlier in the season, when we were playing 3-5-2, Reggie Lamb, as one of those central three, had a renaissance. He was a period in time where he was our best player. He had some great performances. He could put a penalty away, which was great. But
so
yeah,
keep him?
Absolutely not. Although that goal against Carlisle was lovely the other week.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a can of worms to be opened about Reggie Lamb. But yeah, I think he's one of those. But you're right, one of the people that won't be is
Dan Jones.
So no more Dan Jones.
Yeah, Bonner clearly doesn't fancy
never
Dan
really happens.
Jones.
No, never. I don't think it was ever going to happen either. I don't think there's anything that anyone is surprised at in the slightest.
I wonder if we'll see much of Andy Dallas under Bonner before the end of the season, if we ever get an end of a season, that is.
I mean, it would be good to. I do think there's been, from going from last season to having no choice and no ability to change up top. Let's go do that again.
We're changing up north with the new budget, right?
We're moving Cambridge up north. No, basically, from last season, having no options up top to go into almost being too spoilt for choice and not being able to be consistent and get the right amount of, the right amount of forwards and the right forwards having any game time, it seems like he deserves a bit of game time and could be, you know, beneficial for Cambridge to have a bit of a run with, right?
I don't know. Everything I've seen of Andy Dallas is that we didn't do our research properly into him when we signed him, and he was a bit of a rushed...
Bit of a panic buy,
wasn't
he?
Bit of a panic buy. Speaking of panic buying, how's your Lurol situation?
Got plenty. Although Jack's eyes just lit up.
Yeah,
he's going to make use of the facilities.
Well, you can use Jack's notes after this.
I think there's a question about if the league does resume and the season does continue, do you play the loan players or do you try and bed in some youth players? So I guess Dallas fits into that, really, doesn't he?
If you've, Peter.
If you've got nothing else to play for, and I don't know, 10 clubs are going to go bust in League Two anyway.
I mean, I'd rather play him over Adebayo Joe, if I'm perfectly honest at this stage. But I guess it's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because Smith and Mullin are definitely our best strikers, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But should we be playing Nibs?
Both of whom are our players.
Yeah, exactly. So then should we be playing Nibs? Maybe, yeah. Maybe.
Well, we're not playing Nibs because he's injured.
Yeah, but I'm talking in a couple of months.
Didn't you chat to Harvey Nibs at Leyton Orient?
Yeah, that was
How did that not come up as one of our pros from the performance?
From Orient, yeah, that was good.
Were you chatting to him in the
queue for the toilet at half time, and I see Harvey Nibs. And I turned to him and I didn't say...
How much of Harvey Nibs did you see?
Yeah. No, this was before all that.
Oh.
Dirty. And I see him and obviously I've had a few beers at this point. And I turned to him and I didn't say, why aren't you playing? I said, why aren't you on the bench?
your normal spot on the bench.
You should be on the bench. Not why aren't you playing, 2-0 down. Why aren't you on the bench? But, you know, I meant it. I meant it positively. I meant, you know, we could bring you on now. Yeah, we could do it.
Right.
But
just on Big Vic, I was just thinking back to Orient. I mean, I don't think he'll play league football next season. I think he's destined for the conference. But I was just thinking about it. And actually, as bad as he was, and his performance was one of the worst going,
yeah.
One tiny little bit of credit for him is he didn't go missing. He didn't go hiding sort of second half when things weren't going our way. So I guess that's a small testament to his character, especially when you compare him to the likes of Paul Lewis, who was absent for most of the game, and Leon Davis as well, who just went missing in action. So I don't know. I'm trying to think back to that question about any positives from Orient. So Big Vic's big personality will go in there.
That's very nice that you managed to really try and find a positive there.
It's trying to be a happy clapper.
Well, yeah.
It's working out well for me.
We need some happy clapping in the next few months because we've got no football. I think we will bring the pod back again before football comes back.
Well, hopefully. I mean, let's just see what happens. If not...
I mean, you're pretty old. You might not survive the next few weeks.
I know, yeah.
You're both at risk. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're more at risk than I am. Of course, Tom Walker, we wish you well. Sorry you couldn't be on the pod today, mate. Julian Roberts, thank you.
Thanks, mate. I'll see you sometime.
Sometime soon. Jordan Morland, thank you.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Wash your hands.
Leave Harvey Nibs alone in the toilet.